welcome to a special edition of the Daytime Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, TV Guide Canada's Nelson Branco reveals his top 20 most powerful people in the soap industry. It's going to be a great episode, so stay tuned. Nelson, welcome.
Hey, Luke and Jamie, how's it going?
Pretty good. Jamie, welcome to this special episode.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we count it a privilege to have Nelson with us to reveal his list in audio form on Daytime Confidential, so we greatly appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Well, you have 20 spots, as I understand it, on your most powerful list. There are new people and some returnees, I'm sure, and there's some people who dropped out of the list, which we'll discuss at the end of the episode. So why don't we kick off? Who's number 20?
All right. Well, this little website called DaytimeConfidential.com.
Oh, wow.
You guys made my list.
I almost don't know what to say.
Well, you know what? It's true. I think you guys are equal parts Entertainment Weekly and TMZ. You guys are newsy, gossipy. But what's really important, I think, I mean, you can't really understand the soap industry if you're not logging onto your website every day. But what's the most important thing, my list is called, Soap Power 2008, the 20 most influential players of, the year. And I think your podcasts are really, really vital to the industry. I know producers and writers are listening to them, and I think you call out, soaps on their mistakes and herald their triumphs. I think a lot of writers are happy to hear fans dissect storylines. And I think you guys have given them a lot more insight into what fans want, demand, and what they don't want. So, and you've also interviewed really amazing people in the genre, like influential people like Tom Racina, Tom Cassiello, Mimi Torshin. I mean, you introduced me to Tom Cassiello, Victor Miller, and Tom Beards, and I think everyone's pretty much copying you. And, of course, I think your biggest triumph this past year is Bitchy Bangs. I mean, clearly, you guys are affecting the dialogue on soaps.
Well, we thank you very much, and we are greatly, greatly humbled. Totally unexpected, so thank you very much.
And, yes, I think I hope Brian much. Franz is, I hope Brian Franz, does something with you guys. I think you guys would be great on SoapNet, as I said before, as, sort of the daytime version of The View. And we don't get SoapNet in Canada, so I would have to try to find some how to get you guys. Or get SoapNet. But when I was in the States for the Emmys, I did catch some of it. And most of that stuff on SoapNet is garbage. So I think you guys would be lively and be a big hit.
Well, thank you very much. We greatly appreciate that. Who do you have at number 19?
Number 18-19 spot is Bold and Beautiful's Jack Wagner and Heather Tom. Now, Susan Flannery was on the list last year. She completely dropped out because she clearly has absolutely no power at all. But Jack Wagner and Heather Tom are clearly the co-head writers of Bold and the Beautiful. I think they influenced the writing on the show heavily, actually. I know that for a fact. And I think they're the only actors on my list, actually, this year.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, let's see. Let's go ahead and do who you... Okay, you said they were both 18 and 19, so who's your 17?
17 is Tom Cassiello. You know him as an Emmy-winning writer. He was he sort of blew the lid on the writer's strike last year, and I think that really impacted the industry. He's also given us a lot of insights via his blog on MySpace about how the script process works. And, I think he's paid a price. I mean, I hope he hasn't paid a price for his, honesty. And I think he's fearless, talented, and honest. And I think that's my definition of power is part that. And he's also a proud fan, like Ron Carlovati is. And he's not scared to, put that out there. And he definitely exposed or helped expose the scab writing. and I am still shocked that some of these scab writers are still working while he was fired during the strike. So I'm actually, you know, sort of furious about that. I hear the writer's guild is investigating still. I don't know. It's been pretty quiet on that front. So, yeah, Tom Casiello is number 17.
We couldn't agree more. Great guy.
And he has a blog that is a must-read for anyone who wants to know either what is going on in the industry or an insider's perspective on what's taking place in the industry. It's a great blog to read.
Yeah.
Who do you have at number 16?
Let me just say, you know, knowledge is power. So, you know, he's definitely helped educate me on, you know, various areas of the industry. So 15, 16 is Andrew Miller and Eden Regal, or Regal. How do you say her last name?
Regal. Mm-hmm.
Regal. She is very regal. I chose them. I thought long and hard about this. I mean, Andrew Miller, as you know, is the creator of Imaginary Bitches. And Eden's the star, Emmy winner for All My Children, who, she, you know, she's married to him, and they both created this online comic soap opera, I guess we can call it. You know, Jamie Giddens obviously, you know, let me know about the show, so that's another reason why Daytime Confidential made my list. But I think they're showing the industry the future of online possibilities for the genre.
Definitely.
So, yeah. So.
And if anybody's watched one of those episodes, you know that the writing on those episodes is just darn near flawless.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, go on, Jamie. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and he's giving so many great soap stars a platform to show how great they are. People that, I'm going to be honest, I never really thought much of either way, like Connie Fletcher Staton. You know, he's just showing, his writing is really showing what these people can do and how talented they are if the soaps would go there with them. You know, and he's talked to me a little bit about how funny Cameron Matheson and Rebecca Budig are, but you just never get to see that because Daytime doesn't know how to do anything with talent a lot of the times, and he's given them a great platform.
Maybe Andrew Miller needs to be in charge of writing a soap.
Definitely, or you know, maybe having some kind of summit meeting with these executive producers and head writers to discuss the future of Daytime online. I mean, I still refuse to believe that the future of Daytime is online completely. You know, I'm not really sure what the answers are, but you know, soap power obviously is sort of an oxymoron, you know, and these people on this list, it's not necessarily a good thing to be on this list either, right? Because they're controlling a dying, disastrous industry. So they're clearly not very good at their jobs. Yeah, I think what I love about Andrew Miller's work is that it's, you know, it's, he has realistic dialogue. I mean, people swear. People have senses of humor. Daytime needs a sense of humor really bad. And not campy sense of humor, like a real funny, witty sense of humor. I mean, we see that on Santa Barbara. That's pretty much dead. I mean, you know, even the General Hospital used to be amazing at humor, and even that sort of, you know, died along with all the, you know, mob hits on that show.
Who do you have at, what is it, 14? If we skipped them?
Yeah, another double dual. I have 13-14 is the next spot, and that's Stephanie Sloan and Caroline Hinsey, the editors of Soap Opera Digest and Soap Opera Weekly, respectively. They had Lynn Leahy last year as the editorial director on my list, but they, you know, they control pretty much the two biggest soap magazines, and especially they control who's on the cover, and let's face it, whether you buy the magazine or not, the magazines act as billboards in the supermarket stands, and they help create, you know, recognizability with non-soap fans, and whoever's on the cover could actually get someone to start watching a show, like, you know, hey, Mark Derwin's on the cover of Soap Opera Weekly, what's he doing on, you know, soaps again? That sort of thing, although I do think you guys are challenging the soap magazines, and I'm surprised that their liability, I think, is really ignoring the online journalism format. So they definitely
just don't say that too loud. Just keep that undercover.
Yes, exactly. I think they're really stubborn, and it's not even Sloan and Hinsey. I think it's the publishing companies really don't. They really are trying to ignore, you know, the online world, which is completely stupid. It reminds me of the daytime industry 20 years ago, ignoring cable. So they definitely, like I had, Lynn Leahy at number 10. So now Digest and Weekly are number 13, 14. So they've definitely slipped down the polls, or my poll, or my, my list.
Okay. Well, what about number 12?
Number 12 is my best friend, Barbara Bloom, CBS vice president. And why did I pick her? Because of her title. She was number 5 last year. Why did she slip down to number 12? No, it's not because I hate her. It's because she lost all her talent at the rival network, ABC. That's a pretty big infraction as far as I'm concerned. And her shows have regained and assumed power, her individual shows. I mean, they got the Bells finally, the Bells and Sony got Lynn Marie Latham out, who was Lynn Marie was actually number 3 last year on my list. She approved, I don't know what she's approving these days, but, you know, pretty much the CBS lineup is really good right now, actually surprisingly and shockingly and pleasantly amazing right now. And I think it's because she really has nothing to do with her shows anymore. I think, you know, ABC owns her lineup, CBS, 3 or 4 shows are split up by, I think, 3 owners. So, but she's incessantly always trying to control her shows. And I think the shows have regained control. And so that's why she moved down the list. 12. And of course, let's not forget the Daytime Emmy Award debacle.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, turning against, I loved how during the whole new controversy, she said, you know, CBS stance, he doesn't agree with P&G's stance on not having them kiss. So she sort of turned her back publicly on the show. Of course, that was a great opinion to have, and I'm glad she said that, but you know, she didn't do anything really about it either, so, and distanced herself from P&G, even though I know behind the scenes they are really aligned. So that's number 12.
Who do you have at number 11?
Number 11, I have Michael Bruno, who is shown for the first time in my list. He's talent manager to the Stars. He is really simply on this list because he planted Beth Ehlers and Ricky Paul Golden on All My Children. I mean, it's the casting coup, one of the biggest casting coups of the decade, wouldn't you guys say?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Even though ABC is promoting them as Emmy winners in their commercial because they won the Best Couple Award at the Emmys. I mean, that does not an Emmy winner make, so I'm a little pissed off at ABC about that, but because, you know, we should have some respect.
But you know what? Don't you think that's sort of like bitter irony for CBS because they totally didn't win any Emmys that year, so they decided to rig that fan Emmy thing for them to win. Now it's come back to bite them in the ass because ABC gets to promote them as Emmy winners.
And yeah. Wasn't that like the Easy Breezy Beautiful like award, basically, that was sponsored by Easy Breezy Beautiful or something like that?
Yes, yes. Well, there's a reason why Michael Bruno is ahead of Barbara Bloom, I mean, with this casting cue. And, you know, he's a judge and I Want to Be a Soap Star. I know some people said, why wasn't he on your list last year? I'm like, well, first of all, this is a Canadian, like, column, and we don't air I Want to Be on a Soap Star. And the viewers now choose the winner, so he's not even involved in choosing the winner. And, you know, he needs to place his clients on soaps, so he really needs the soaps to hire his clients. There's really no power there. But because he really brokered this deal, I decided to put him on my list. And, you know, he knows the industry, and he's, you know, the Simon Cowell of the business. So he's definitely made my list.
He's also the one that he's also represents Julie Pinson, if I'm not mistaken, which helped her get moved to As the World Turns, and she's had a great run on it as well.
Yeah, and Austin Peck. I mean, he even represents me. Of course, I'm just joking. Maybe he should represent you guys, and you'll get a SoapNet deal. But we'll talk about that later.
Have his people call our people.
Martina is grinding her teeth. And then number 10, This may shock people, actually, but, I mean, hopefully they'll understand why, but I, number 10, are the PNG fans. They make their voice very loud and clear at the ratings. Martha Byrne left As the World Turns. Did you see As the World Turns nosedive down the ratings? They're not like, they don't slowly tune out like ABC fans or even NBC fans. I mean, they were pissed, and they, As the World Turns, was the only soap last year to not lose any viewers. Now they've lost, like, I mean, they're at the bottom of the ratings. And then, of course, the nuke fan protest, whatever you want to call it, appeal, to have their favorite super couple, Noah and Luke, kiss on As the World Turns, which was led by Roger Newcomb at WeLoveSoaps.com. And As the World Turns relented. I mean, around the same time my Out story came out, about 4, 5, 6 weeks later, which is when they were taping, they kissed out of the blue. We weren't even alerted the press. So I think the PNG fans wield a power, which I don't think I've seen, you know, anywhere else. I mean, no, most soaps don't listen to their fans, but the PNG sort of relented. And let's not forget Guiding Lights introduced that production module, and we know how that all turned out.
All right. Well, who do you have at number 9?
Number 9 is Jill Fehrenfelps, executive producer, GH. Last year, she was number 7. She dropped a bit because she no longer executive produces Night Shift. So, you know, she won an Emmy. She pulled that out of her behind this year, despite ABC not getting any nominations, and General Hospital just getting one ASCII nomination. So, you know, she produces arguably the most popular show in daytime. And she's a great producer in the sense that she really does let her head writer write, which could be a bad thing. She may need to pull in Bob Guza, but she doesn't. I mean, she produces a show, and she's only as good as her head writer. I mean, because she's, and any producer should only be as good as their head writer. But yes, Jill Fehrenfelps is number 9. Oh, and she went down too because I think the Sarah Brown casting was a disaster. Mark Teschner, who's GH's casting director, made this list last year because of his, you know, racially diverse casting on Night Shift, and he was number 14 last year. And but they won't, you know, she won't bring back Jeannie Francis full time. I think killing off a legacy character like Josh Duhon was a huge error. I mean, just ship him out of town, you know, and bring him back down the road. And, of course, Sarah Brown. I mean, how do you screw up Sarah Brown? Those are the reasons why she went down a couple spots.
So who do you have at number 8, then?
Number 7 and 8 are the Bells and Sony. I put them together because they were asleep at the wheel last year. They let Ken Corday sort of... they let Ken Corday run amok with the show. I mean, we've all seen the Hogan Sheffer. We all know about the Hogan Sheffer debacle. And the Bells and Sony let LML ruin the number one daytime soap. But at the end of last year, during the writer's strike, they, you know, smartened up and hired Maria Irina Bell, put Weinar back in the hands of a Bell, and snapped up Josh Griffith and Hogan Sheffer, you know, which is a little ironic since he was at Days with Sony. But, yeah, so I think they were smart to use the writer's strike to dethrone LML. And then, of course, Sony hired Ed Scott, which is still a great addition to daytime. He's streamlined the production, cut down costs, and sort of got the show back to, you know, its more realistic roots. I mean, it still has a ways to go. I won't mention, of course, liabilities of Dina Higley, whose many claim is was scab writing and Days. I can't believe she's still a head writer, but that's definitely one of their liabilities. So they still have a lot of work to do. It's unbalanced but hopeful. And of course, you know, we don't even know if Days is official. Well, we don't know if it's officially renewed, even though, you know, Ed Scott and everyone and their mothers knows, you know, NBC has renewed it. So, yeah, so they share 7 and 8.
Who do you have up at number 6?
Number 6 is Ed Scott, co-executive producer of Days of Our Lives. And I just pretty much mentioned my reasons in the Bell Sony entry.
Did he move up, or did he drop from last year?
He was number 9, so he moved up.
Okay.
His biggest achievement, of course, is his Emmy nominations for a show. I think he was really responsible for that. And, you know, he brought Kathy Foster over, Weinar Emmy-winning director, and some of Weinar's Emmy-winning producers over to Days, and I think we've all noticed the difference.
Yes, definitely.
Well, we're down to the top 5. Who is it that you have for number 5?
Number 5 is Bradley Bell, executive producer and head writer of The Bold and The Beautiful. Of course, he has his hands in the Bell Dynasty Corporation as well. But last year he was number 2, and he dropped down to number 5 because he's on this list because B&B is the most financially successful show on daytime. It airs in like over a billion countries and makes over, you know, $1 billion. Of course, I'm exaggerating. In syndication fees. So, I mean, even if it didn't air in the States, it would be very successful. So, of course, it still wants to be, you know, the number one show in the States. But he had a lot of liabilities this year. And I'm sure you can guess which my number one gripe is, which is Susan
What's
Flannery.
That?
Well, the destruction of Susan Flannery, Stephanie Forrester. It seems to me that he's punishing her for announcing her retirement. Doesn't it look like that to you guys? I mean, on screen, the life has been sucked out of the woman. Sorry, go on.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I was wondering if it's not that, maybe it's the fact that after that whole having her involved in Brooke's rape, they felt like they had to go as far in the opposite direction as possible to try to rebuild some sympathy for the character. But I definitely think her time is been served, and she should be back, you know, kicking ass and taking names.
Well, wouldn't you want to use her when you have about, what, she said 2 years?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I always say there's no need to write it like it's happening now.
There's something fishy there.
And that's one of the things where in the top ten ways to improve Bold and the Beautiful episode, we discussed the fact that show either really needs to outline what the plan is for Susan Flannery, or they just need to get her back on the screen ASAP, because this stuff of her just basically disappearing and we hear that she's having depression doesn't cut it.
Yeah, the plan should be to write her as she is until the day she announces she's leaving and worry about that then. They can't do a business plan on how to deal with one of their matriarchs. They have to write her as she is until the day she leaves, and then she can go out like with a bang, like the original actress, the original Alexandra,
Beverly
McKenzie. You know, I mean, write her as she is up until the moment. Of course, they didn't know she was planning to do that, but still.
Well, this kind of like reminds me of Jeannie Francis. I mean, what the General Hospital did to her, sort of towards the end of her run. Sort of not using her and sort of, you know, moving her to the backdrop. And I don't know. Susan, I just don't think she's interested in doing this. I think they've ruined her character. I mean, I hope they would salvage it. But, you know, Stephanie Forrester, of course, is probably the closest thing we've ever had to an Alexandra Spalding on daytime, played by Beverly McKenzie, of course. But my biggest beefs with Brad is, of course, wasting Leslie Kay's talent. Of course, she's, you know, enjoying sort of a revival of sorts right now, but it's nothing to write home about either, even though I do love my little Alicia, as I like to call them, Owen and Alicia. I think Luke likes them too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I sent Leslie Kay your link to that. She really appreciated your comments.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And then, of course, just before we move on, I'm going to say this, well, I think I said this last week in Fred's report, Brad Bell is going to regret making Kay Alden co-head writer. I mean, I hear she's been writing the show all year, which is why it sucks, when, you know, Jack Wagner and Heather Tom aren't writing the show, but I have a feeling he's going to, I mean, he's never made anyone a co-head writer, so this is quite a historic, bold move on his part, no pun intended.
I was going to say it's bold, but it may not turn out to be beautiful. Is that what you're going for?
Yes, exactly. Thank you. You should be a writer, Luke.
Oh, imagine that. No, never
imagine
mind.
Imagine that. Maybe I'll become one, too. Yeah, I don't know what he's doing. I mean, Jamie, what do you think? You're a writing aficionado, writing fan. I mean, what do you think of this K. Alden?
Now, you know, I liked Kay Alden's writing when she was writing for Young and the Restless. So, you have a backstage perspective that I don't. You know, for me, I didn't know the real dynamic between her and Jack Smith when they were co-head writing, I think it was, after Bill, after he got sick. But I remember enjoying the show when I saw her name at the head writer. But, as I say, since I've been doing Daytime Confidential, I've learned so much that I didn't know just from sitting at home watching the name. So you obviously have an insider's perspective. So I don't know. I think that I'm hoping for the best because, I mean, how do you not learn something from working for Bill Bell, who, in my opinion, is the god? I didn't watch Douglas Marling because I wasn't watching back then. But for this fan's perspective, who grew up on Young and the Restless, there is no one better than Bill Bell. And I would hope that some of that training over 35 years, you know, it might come back. Because, you know, I've seen a lot of these writers that write sucky on one show. And then, you know, you give them a new job, or even they come back to the, you know, Dina Higley, I thought, did really good when she first got to Days, but now she's making me frustrated and scream at Luke in podcast. Sorry, Luke.
No, but, that's okay. People scream at me on the podcast on a daily basis, so you joining the group is nothing new.
So I don't know. I guess I'm just going to kind of wait and see.
Yeah, I just, I haven't liked anything she's written this past year on Bold and the Beautiful. I don't know if a title will, you know, kick her ass into gear. I didn't like what she was writing at YNR. That's why they brought in Jack Smith. Jack Smith used to be at B&B, when B&B used to be great. They moved him to YNR, and that's when YNR, I think, was the best show on television, primetime or daytime, during that whole Kathy Death, the original Joan Van Ark, the original Gloria. I mean, that was Jack Smith. She was really being phased out at that point. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people don't know that William Bell had really left the show a long time before he left the show, if you know what I mean. He was credited as head writer, but Kay was writing it. The press doesn't like to talk about that, but you know me, I'm fearless, so I'm going to put it out there. Kay Alden was writing the show a long time before they let the fans know that Bill Bell was...
Now, did she do the Glow by Jabot and...
Brash and Sassy?
Yeah, well, Brash and Sassy was years ago, but did she do the Glow by Jabot summer storyline? Was that her?
I would have to check, but I think, yeah. I mean, it was still a favorite. I mean,
yeah. I remember...
All the 80s.
Yeah, I remember that, you know, she got a lot of flack for... you know, Britney and all of them being front and center a lot. But see, I loved those teen characters when they were front and center. And it's kind of like with God in Light, you know, the fans complained so much back when Danny and Michelle and the mob in San Cristobal. But I'm looking at it today, and I would watch those teenagers around a pool house any day over Victor's Vampire Bride and Gloria 24/7. So
my problem with her is she's an intellectual writer, and she doesn't write from the heart and the soul, and I think you've seen that a lot on B&B. You know, Patrick Mulcahy's the one that put the heart and soul, literally, in the soul, in the Storm Suicide storyline. Why didn't he make Patrick Mulcahy co-head writer? That's where the industry needs to go. He's the best writer on daytime. Sorry, Ron Carlovati, but Patrick Mulcahy is the best writer in daytime.
As long as she just makes sure that the people at Bold and the Beautiful keep wearing diamonds and having fireplaces, then everything will be fine.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah.
Who do you have at number four?
Number four, if someone doesn't know, and who I met at the Daytime Emmys, and I'm kicking myself for not putting him on last year's list, because I didn't know he existed, his name is James Sarnoff, and he's a talent literary agent. He runs a Sarnoff company, and he represents every single producer and head writer, of course. Again, I'm exaggerating, but the majority of every head writer and producer he represents, and he places people on shows. I mean, they go to him, and I met him at the Daytime Emmy Awards last year, and he was a lovely guy. He actually taught me so much about the industry, which I didn't know. I just think it's a little dangerous to have one agent control the futures of, you know, pretty much 90% of the creative, you know, community of daytime, because we need, you know, we need new blood. So I think it's a little too incestuous. I mean, that's a liability, of course. So James, people need to know his name, James Sarnoff. He's really the big cheese, I think, in daytime. He's the reason why Megan McTavish is keeping recycled in the industry. So, you know, it's a powerful position to be in. It's also a very dangerous one. So he's number four. And Jamie, maybe you should give him a call.
You know, I'm Googling right now. I'm like...
Oh, I have his number. I can give you his number. And his
hook
email.
A brother up.
please, James, hire or take on Jamie Giddens, G-I-D-D-E-N-F.
Like TLC, I ain't
Luke
too proud
here.
To beg.
And Luke here as a producer, because he knows his money and fans, and he knows characters and storylines, too.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, but I think that Jamie is much more talented than I when it comes to that type of stuff. Who do you have
at
number three?
I didn't know how to do even a Google document until you, Luke. We compliment each other.
That's Luke's big contribution.
Hey,
to
I am
life,
like, I love the scene in Sex and the City where they hand carry the cell phone, and she's like, "I can't work this." I was like, "Thank you. Give me freaking
bang." Don't forget Bitchy Bangs, okay?
Oh, yeah.
He clearly gave an Emmy winner some ideas, so Luke's not, you know.
He's not too
Luke
shabby.
Moment.
Oh, well, thank you. But who do you have at number three?
Number three. Oh, my God. You know what? I totally miscounted this. But number three, I guess, well, it's two people sharing one spot. I don't know how I did that. Sorry, but... they're pretty much one person anyway in my eyes. Ron Carlovati and Frank Valentini, Emmy winners. Ron is obviously the head writer of One Night to Live. Frank Valentini, my next husband, is the executive producer of One Night to Live.
Don't give him all the power then.
I know. I hope Daniel Goddard's not listening to this. Oh, people get a sense of humor.
and this is America now.
The greatest... I mean, the greatest currency of power is autonomy, I think. And they clearly get to do whatever they want on that show. And that's starting to be a worrisome thing. I think maybe they need to be reined in a bit. But don't quote me on that, because you know what? I want to see how this anniversary stuff plays out and them really starting to create their own original land view. But, you know, they're like Batman and Robin, and they have like a small budget. I think you guys have a bigger budget than One Life to Live does.
Okay, and I wouldn't quite go that far. I would not go that far.
and they boast the most talented, expensive cast on daytime. I mean, they brought
and it looks so lush and beautiful. You know, you've told me that before about their budget not being that so. What is going on over at Guiding Light? Can they be cloned?
It's starting to look like Bold and the Beautiful, and Bold and the Beautiful's always had the best one.
Well, it looked like all my children last week during the heaven scenes about all that white lighting, but of course that's because it was heaven.
Well, that's what you call the New Beginning set. I mean, if we call brass tacks, that's the New Beginning set.
Yeah, I mean, the show is, and I've been in the studio, I mean, that is it's basically a floor, I mean... And even though I do hear One Night to Live may have to exit that studio, which is one of the most beautiful studios I've ever been in. It's like this old armory on 66th Street. You know, Frank has hired the best directors. The editing team is just phenomenal, I think, the way they actually pay attention to the scripts in terms of the way they edit things. And, of course, that's the writer, but they work, you know, in conjunction with the writer. But they've been, basically Ron and Frank have... created, you know, a miracle on 66th Street and streets. And last year they were number eight, and this year they're number three. They pretty much control their own show, which I don't even think the Bells can say that, you know. And of course, Ron Carlovati sort of created a renaissance, I think, in the daytime industry last year. And he's a proud Silk fan. So, you know what? I don't think I've ever heard. I've never even heard Brad Bell say that he's a Silk fan. Ron Carlovati sort of made, you know, Silk fan not a four-letter word, and I think he's really impressed fans, and I think he respects us, which is really unheard of.
I have to say his Emmy win speech was so breathtaking and beautiful, and I totally agree about the whole being a fan of the genre. I've taken a lot of writing classes, and the first thing they tell you is to study and read and watch the genre you want to write in. So it irks me to no end when I hear writers or producers or actors say they don't watch soaps, and they act like it's a grandiose thing to say that you don't. Okay, so that means you think you're better than the genre you work for. That's ludicrous. So
Dina Higley. Sorry, I was coughing.
Right. Okay, well, let's get to the nitty-gritty.
Let me tell you about some liabilities about Ron and Frank, because I don't want people to think I'm giving my future husband special treatment. They are giving far too much plot information away to the soap magazines. I mean, I knew every single thing that was going to happen, save for maybe two little moments during, you know, the anniversary week. And yes. I think they're screwing themselves over. I mean,
don't you think that's because of the 40th? I mean,
you know what, Nelson? Tom did a blog about
takeover. Mm-hmm. We knew exactly what was happening. We knew Adriana was going to punch Gigi at the wedding. I mean,
Give you some perspective, my perspective of, because I read Tom Cosiello did a blog today, and he basically echoed your sentiment on that. And I totally understand what you're saying, but this show gets no freaking publicity. They get nothing. GH farts, they get publicity. Days farts, they get publicity. All of these other shows, you know, they have these monster PR. It's like the people at, I mean, and I'm not going to say that because I don't know that. But the obvious favorite at the network is GH, and it's rightly so because it is the most popular. But come on, you've got this show that is doing so damn good, and you never read anything about it. You know, they're still putting Days on the cover of my magazine.
I do
see your column, yes, definitely. Well, you're mainstream, but we're not. But the other magazines, they ignore this show.
Yeah, One Life. I do have to agree with Jamie on that, just from the standpoint of when is the last time you see One Life to Live on a cover? And One Life to Live got an awesome cover for that wedding. And
I mean, I want Brenda to come back just as much as anybody. Yeah.
But, you know, I was at the Paley Center in June, and he, you know, explained everything that was going to happen in the anniversary almost 2 months before it happened. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe a week before you reveal certain things. I just think spoilers. Bill Bell was a huge believer that spoilers would ruin the industry, and I delete my spoilers when I get them because let's face it, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to predict what's going to happen on the show. But you know, it's fun to guess what's going to happen. I mean, you guys do spoilers on your website, but you really don't know for sure what's going to happen, so you guys just really, you play the guessing game, which is fun, mm-hmm. and that keeps people tuning in. I think people are watching One Life to Live, but, you know, so we don't really need to know what's about to happen, and you'll find most people, especially on your site, they'll say, oh, you know, I try to avoid One Life to Live spoilers, but I can't, because, you know, you just want to find out what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, but at the same, conversely, I mean, I don't mean to argue with you, but conversely, when I read One Life to Live spoilers, because it's so good, it only makes me want to watch it more.
He's so original, and he's unpredictable most of the time, that I just want to see, I want to be in the moment when I'm seeing, like,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, two different viewer styles. My cousins, when I get something and I say, guess what's going to happen to Sam next week on GH? She starts screaming, don't tell me. But like me, I've always wanted to know every single thing. I read every soap magazine cover to cover, would get on the internet. But it just makes me want to watch more. I mean, and look at like Michael Osiello. Those spoiler sites spoilers made his career. So I guess I'm saying there's both. You know, there's the types that want to be surprised, and then there's the types like me that, like, want to read everything voraciously that they can find. But I think a lot of what they did with that.
I do like reading that stuff, but, but when a show is brilliant, like, I remember Soap Opera Weekly had John Abbott fall down the stairs. That's when Jack Smith, this is when I was so obsessed with YNR. So so obsessed. I've never been that obsessed with the show. Weiner was, like, so amazing at that point. And I saw John falling down the stairs, and it hadn't happened, and it was, like, 5 weekdays ahead that I saw it. And I think it was a Gloria pushed him or something happened, and I was so angry that that spoiled it. That storyline just had driven me, you know, had just me so engaged.
But you know, in this day where there's, like, not word of mouth, and it's like, I think the gun that they're behind is they want to get so many people to watch, because, like, look at the Nuke situation. When they kissed, they didn't promote it. You know, there were no spoilers on it, and it made for great television, but they missed an opportunity. Yeah, it could have driven up ratings.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm all for ratings, but, I mean, I think When Life's Live, it's not going to affect the ratings, I mean, regardless of what they're doing. So let's just surprise us. I mean, give some stuff away, yeah, but not everything. I mean, come on, you guys have to admit. They gave pretty much
I'd never seen that. I must say, I'd never seen that much detail given, but.
I thought Tom Christopher was going to be behind the BE takeover, and then, of course, I find out 2 weeks later it's going to be Dorian. And I'm like, oh, he's lying to me, he's lying to me. Because that would have made so much sense that Carlo Hester was behind stealing, you know, Ace's company. And so it just, like, took the love out of watching the show for me in May. And of course, knowing, that Rex and Adriana would marry, I mean, I thought they wouldn't marry. And so knowing the end result of that storyline really kind of made me go, whatever, and you come up with conclusions about the story, like, oh, that'll suck, you know. I still watch, but let's agree. I mean, it's not a black and white issue, but moving along, I do want to say that I think ABC is treating One Life's Live with a lot more respect than they did last year because of Ron and Frank.
Yes.
And let's not forget, GH didn't get shit for their anniversary, and look what One Life's Live got for their 40th. I mean, basically a masturbatory fest at SoapNet, and Agnes Nixon came on. I mean, they gave them money. I mean, that anniversary.
See, I think that's decided, though. I think GH, they are so sick of the fans wanting the old days. I really think that they're trying to distance themselves from their past. I mean, look at it. You know, they bring Laura back for a dream. They want to make people forget the old days so they can focus on, you know, how it is now.
I totally agree. That's, and I have point to say that that montage that they gave with 58 seconds was just terrible. I mean, it wasn't even really worth it because of how thankless it was to the fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Well, we're getting down to the nitty gritty, the number 2 and number 1 slot. So who do you have as the second most powerful person in daytime this year?
Well, this is going to be a shocker. I think because, well, let me just say it. Brian Franz is number 2, and last year he was number 1. So that means Brian Franz is not the most powerful person in soaps. So
wow.
That's a little bit scary in terms of number 1 then.
I thought about this really long and hard, like months and months and months, and I think my choices are correct as for the number 1 spot. But Brian Franz, you know, we've talked about this before. He's the anti-Barbara Gloom. He loves and respects the genre. He has a great fashion sense for a straight man. I'll give him that. most importantly, he's a fan, even though he doesn't like to tout that. Power plays, I mean, you know, he produced a pretty relative classy Emmy telecast. He stole A-list talent from CBS. He should basically win an Emmy for casting. I mean, these daytime executives, they're really, in the olden days, and Jamie and I have talked about this, executive producers really controlled their casting, you know. But now it's left to the network heads. But he brought back David Morgan, Darnell Williams. He got rid of Barbara and James as head writers of All My Children. Thank you. Even though he's bringing back Chuck Pratt, but to AMC, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but we'll see if that affects his placement next year. He bought MVP at SoapNet. His liabilities are huge because he's pretty much shifting away from soap programming at SoapNet. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but which was in my fearless predictions last year in January. I just knew they were going to just really go in another direction. And he hasn't hired DaytimeConfidential.com. I think he's making a mistake by not selling episodes of the show, on iTunes at least. You know, why wasn't the daytime Emmys available the day after iTunes or somewhere? And let's not forget, I mean, he halted that Fionnuala Hughes defection to Y&R. I mean, that was obviously with her big summer storyline.
He blocked that shot. It's like watching basketball, the battle of the networks.
Isn't it? Yeah, that's a really good analogy. I mean, yeah. And then, of course, not barring me from his daytime Emmy party. That was a big, that's a big plus. Then there's a huge liability on his entry, which I can't discuss until I tell you who the most powerful player in daytime is.
Drum roll, please. Number one, who is it?
The Nielsen ratings. Not the Nelson ratings, the Nielsen ratings. This industry lives and dies by these flawed numbers. I don't believe them for 1 second. I never have. I was a 12-year-old boy, and I knew those numbers were, you know, wrong. And unfortunately, this industry is going to die based on an inaccurate measurement system. That's the joke in this entire thing. Historians are going to write that an entire industry died because of this stupid system. I mean, why aren't there measurement tools in every television in America or North America or in the world? Why? It's not infringing. You don't give the advertisers, well, we'll have to give them some kind of demo information, but, you know, it's not infringing on my privacy if people know I watch One Life to Live. You know?
No.
So,
why isn't there technology that monitors every computer, I mean, every digital box, yeah, you know, out there? I mean, why is it still this sample? I was a Nielsen household one time, and I never watched those shows I wrote down.
Here's the thing, that if they really wanted to do it, they could do it, because TiVo, the company that has that, which is not the same as the DVR company or the DVRs that your local cable provider provides, TiVo can tell you exactly who's watching what when. And that's one of the big things after the Super Bowl, that they can tell exactly how many things have been replayed, what the most popular moment of the Super Bowl was. If people wanted to just get their act together, they could just, it wouldn't even have to come in the TV. It would just be off your DVR box.
Well, we're online. You know, Daytime Confidential, tvguide.ca, and, you know, we pretty much get a really fair representation of who's reading us. And let's not forget, Luke, I mean, you're really the one who brought this to my attention, because I mean, I'm just shocked that the DVR plus 5 rule is still, you know, in action. Why isn't it DVR plus 20 days? Or, you know, of course, advertisers.
Well, in
a way, but it should be at least plus 7.
Well, and the thing is it's only live plus 1, which is same day viewing.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Most primetime television shows have live plus 3 for advertising, but when they calculate it for, like, when they go back and calculate it at the end of the season, if they do it by live plus 7, many of these shows, like Ugly Betty, which is considered to be a modest hit, gain at least 3 million viewers just based on DVRs if you do live plus 7.
And Brian Franz needs to get, you know, he needs to create Nielsen reform. Screw Emmy reform, Nielsen reform, because they live and die by this. Storylines are changed, you know, based on Nielsen's. Star salaries are based on, you know, what someone can attract, well, how many viewers someone can attract. So I just, you know, I thought long and hard, and usually, you know, you think, of course, Brian Franz is the most powerful person, but he's not. Who does Brian Franz answer to other than, you know, Walt Disney? It's, you know, everyone answers to the Nielsen ratings, and, you know, and we were fools, and I go, wow, the ratings went up for Nuke. Wow. And it's like, we fall for it every single time. But the fact is, this is not an accurate measurement tool. And, you know, it's, how can you sample a small section of society and claim that you can't put a scientific measurement on that or calculation on that? Or it's a mathematical equation that, you know, I'm a unique person. You know, one has viewing habits as I do. That's just so insulting and stupid.
And they're targeting the wrong demographics anyway. I'm not saying ever. Women 18 to 50, there was a reason that, I mean, you know, that was, there's a reason 18 to 49 is what it is, but they, you know, Luke and I have talked about this. Most of the comments we get about these soaps are from minorities and gay men. They could spin this into a Bravo or a Logo type model and start really aggressively going after advertisers that would attract gay or minority audiences, and they could save this genre that way. But they're still banking it on housewives, and there are no more housewives anymore. You know, they're at work. I mean, people watch soaps when they're going to watch soaps. Soap fans are the people that got hooked on the fantasy as little kids. And minorities and disenfranchised people get hooked on soaps because of the fantasy element. And, well, and they're totally missing the boat on that.
And gay men have disposable income. Hello? I mean, why aren't we courting these advertisers who, you know, we need to have more research on gay men. I'm sorry. I mean, come on. I think we're... You know, I am a huge part of this, you know, doing my community is a huge, I don't know, I'm not going to get into percentages, of course, but I have to say, like, I only hear from gay men, like, pretty much from my column. And so, I mean, that's a huge sign.
The other thing is that when you talk about the housewives that Jamie mentioned a little bit ago, the housewives that are still watching soaps are many of the people, or many of the women who are either watching it at that night or on the weekends in marathons because they're on their DVR. If you rely on these numbers just for people who watch it live and on that same day, this industry, like you said, will slit its own throat because there are countless numbers of people who watch it in marathons on the weekend or watch it online or aren't in the demographic that these people are so desperately trying to get.
And I think a lot of us, the viewers, are watching bits and parts of each soap. We're watching more soaps to get our soap fix because, let's face it, most soaps aren't perfect and are horrible to watch. So we watch little bits of each show, and you can't do that all in one day. You can't watch 8, 9 soaps a day. And I think a lot of people watch, you know, 3 or 4 at the most, or at the least. And you have to do that on the weekends or, you know... I mean, I don't watch every soap every single day. I mean, I try to, but I can't. It's impossible. You know, I have to watch my primetime television.
There you have it. The top 20 most powerful... What is it? The top 20 most powerful?
It's Soap Power 2008.
Soap Power 2008.
20. Well, now it's 21. I didn't realize. Thanks, guys. I really can't. Yeah, I really sucked at math.
So did I. When Luke starts talking about that live plus this and that, I'm going like that Barbie doll that got banned. Math hurts.
It's the 21 most influential people because, you know, or players because, you know, I think influence is, you know, no one really controls the industry except for the Nielsen ratings, but it's who can influence the industry, and that's what I like to focus on.
I always wanted to make a top 20. I thought it would be the MTV video countdown, but...
Well, but now we didn't bring out, now we didn't even make the top 20. We got bumped to top 21.
Yeah, now you're...
damn.
We're going to definitely move up the list next year. I'm pretty sure of it.
We appreciate
you
that.
To it.
I guess in wrapping things up, there are some omissions of people who dropped off the list from last year. I know you mentioned Susan Flannery being one of them, but I don't remember hearing Ellen Wheeler's name anywhere mentioned this year. And were there any other people?
Yeah, I don't think Ellen Wheeler has any power, even on her show. You can't even keep Ricky Paul Golden on your show. I mean, I love the man, but come on. He's no Tony Geary. I mean, can you imagine if she was controlling General Hospital? Well, that's a scary
thought.
Let's
not say wicked.
Oh, okay, well, Lynn-Marie Latham. I like to say Latham because I refuse to pronounce her name correctly. She was number 3 last year because she, you know, a producer and a head writer is the most powerful position. I mean, when you control both the production and the writing, I mean, you pretty much have autonomy. But she's off the list. Robert Guza's off the list. He's also not head writing because he was on the list last year, mainly because, you know, GH was a powerhouse, but he's also head writing Night Shift and created Night Shift. Susan Flannery is completely off the list. Lynn Leahy's off the list. Van Hansis and Jake Silverman are off the list. They made my list last year because of their notoriety and, of course, their groundbreaking storyline, but I changed it to the Nuke fans this year because I think they were the P&G fans, which also include the Nuke fans. Michael Logan fell off the list, and Mark Teschner, and Kim Zimmer, for obvious reasons. I mean, I put her on the list last year because of her refusal to take a salary cut. And I think that, you know, was a precedent and made a precedent in this industry. So she is off.
We have had a blast visiting with you for the top 21 most influential people in daytime.
Well, ditto. Anytime, you guys.
You can check out Nelson's column at tvguidecanada.ca. I believe that's what it is. If not, we will have the correct link to it on the website in this post, so be sure to check that out. He publishes his Suds Report and Nelson Ratings each week, and a special feature as well, so you'll also want to check that out. Jamie, thank you.
Actually, one more thing.
Okay.
The reason why you also made my list, DaytimeConfidential.com, you actually made me, you bitches, on this podcast, made me go out and buy the most expensive speakers I could buy for my computer because I love listening to your podcast that much. And if that's not power, I don't know what is. You affected my bank account.
Oh, wow. Hey, well, you're helping us because, like, people from Canada, like, message me on Facebook to tell me I love them. And I'm like, or they love me, and I'm like, hell, this is awesome.
Well, it has been a pleasure visiting with you as always. Until next time, we thank you for listening. So long, folks.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.